It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and happy Friday. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
We did our third installment of Six Impossible Episodes, Mother Goose Rhymes today.
These are so fun.
I enjoy them. I think we may be nearing the end of them just because I felt like with this one, there were fewer poems to talk about that we had not already talked about, that there is some sort of purported historical explanation to talk about. And also, I felt like the purported historical explanations being offered, there was like even less backup than in earlier. It just feels like we may be coming to a natural end of this particular series. One question that people have asked the last couple times we've done this or slash suggestion is that we do one that is about like not English language nursery rhymes. And in particular, wouldn't it be nice to have one that was like not even about languages from Europe nursery rhymes? And while I agree that is a cool idea, the thing that makes these episodes possible is having been so steeped in all of these poems since before I could read that they are there in my mind immediately. And that is not trying to, like, number one, find nursery rhymes to talk about for a language that we don't speak, and then to be able to, like, get to the possible cultural context of them for a culture we're not part of. Like, that is just so far from our experience and knowledge that I don't think it's really gonna work out for this show.
Yeah, I feel like that's the kind of thing you get a grant for and you go take 6 or 8 months to do.
Yeah, that would, yeah.
Which would be amazing, but like not really plausible on a weekly episode show.
Yeah, yeah. People know this if they listen to us all the time. We do 2 new episodes of the show each week with each of us writing one, which means we can't take 6 months to, to research something or totally get the foundational knowledge for something that is like so far outside of our experience. Which is a frustration sometimes.
Yes.
Like, sometimes I wish I could just, like, magically have all of the knowledge to talk about something that's totally outside the realm of anything we have ever covered before. But that can be just not feasible in the time it's allowed, which is why sometimes we have authors on the show who have different knowledge and experience than we do.
Yes.
But then that requires preparation a whole different other way. Two things... Two things came up in this research that caused me to question whether maybe I had accidentally fallen into some kind of alternate universe in sort of like a Berenstain Bears situation. Tommy Thumb's Pretty Songbook.
Yes.
I have 100% for sure called it Tom Thumb's Pretty Songbook in previous episodes. And I thought that was the name of it. I thought it was Tom Thumb's Pretty Songbook. And the first time I saw Tommy Thumb's Pretty Songbook when doing research for this, I was like, is that right? And then not only is it right, like there's nowhere that it's written as Tom Thumb's. And I'm just like, it was solidified in my brain as Tom Thumb's Pretty Songbook, not Tommy Thumb's. The other thing is,
Tommy Thumbs sounds like a character that got written out of Goodfellas.
Kinda.
Tommy Thumbs, he got pretty songs.
The other thing is, I have read some of T.S. Eliot's work. I studied some of it in college in literature classes. I have always associated T.S. Eliot with British poetry.
Hello, me too.
Because he did, I mean, he moved to the UK, became a British citizenship, renounced his US citizenship all the time. I had never really studied his biography in any way, but like always in my head, he's been a British poet. No. When I got to the part about how he learned, here we go around the mulberry bush. And that for him, it was a prickly pear, apparently, and that he had grown up in St. Louis, Missouri. I was like, that cannot be right. And then I looked it up, and yes, T.S. Eliot grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. And I was just like, am I having a break with...
Have I fallen into the wasteland?
Yeah, like, it's, is there a glitch in the matrix? What is happening? So yeah, both of those two things. I just had a weird existential. It's Tommy Thumb's Pretty Songbook, and T.S. Eliot was not raised in the UK. What?
Oh, I love it. I had a moment when I was first reading your outline where I was right out of the gate. I was like, wait, there's some... I mean, I remember hearing the canon story about Humpty Dumpty.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, yeah, but everybody knows it's an egg. Like, it never occurred to me that it could not have been an egg
person.
It
might have not been an egg, yeah.
I was like, that's what broke my little brain.
What? I don't remember which bit of research it was that I was reading, but they were talking about Humpty Dumpty. And they were talking about how this only really makes sense as a riddle if there's a reason for an egg to be on a wall in the first place. Like, why is the egg on the wall? And I was like, I was trying to think through various riddles that I know and like whether there are weird details like that that could really be considered some kind of a strange red herring. But yeah,
That chicken had a couple of drinks.
Yeah, I think I have always sort of imagined Humpty Dumpty in my head as like an egg, but with arms and legs and a crown on his head.
100% he is an egg.
Yeah.
Crown optional for me, but he is 100% an egg person.
Yeah.
The end. He's an egg. Yeah,
Glad we're all on the same page with that.
My brain also made a very silly association, and then I was like, oh, somebody study that. Which is that towards the end, when we were talking about the Opies, kind of noting that there are these very similar person waiting for a thing, I was like, somebody write a paper about how this relates to Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot. Please, somebody write that paper. Please.
That sounds, yeah. Do it.
I mean, I love me some Beckett. So
yeah.
And did my senior project in college was about Samuel Beckett. But I had never. I actually, Godot is probably the least studied of his pieces for me.
Yeah.
But I just loved the idea of it suddenly being a really weird extrapolation of a nursery rhyme and how that could be a completely different interpretation of what that is.
Yeah. That sounds interesting, though.
Somebody else do it. I'm lazy. I have seeded the plant and now it can grow in someone else's brain.
Yeah. My senior thesis in literature was about the poetry of Adrienne Rich and Muriel Rukeyser. And with like just a weird now in hindsight, many years later, focus on sort of a pop psychology, but it was a whole weird thing. It did not make a lot of sense. And sometimes it's one of the weird things that I occasionally will look back on it and go, huh, how did I come up with this weird thing that I did for two poets whose work that I really loved? It took a really strange angle. Anyway, that's more than anyone needed to know about my bachelor's degree.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked about the Chicken of Tomorrow contest this week, as well as a lot of background about chickens in general.
Yeah. This gave me many flashbacks because my parents used to raise chickens when I was a kid.
We did not raise chickens ourselves, but we had neighbors who raised chickens.
We had chickens. A lot of chickens. I don't mean like we had four chickens. I mean, we had hundreds of chickens.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
It was a lot. We had a little like mini farm situation going on, and I will tell you what might be the most disturbing fact about me.
Okay.
Which is that on chicken slaughtering day, I would drag my little Holly Hobby table and chair set out to just outside the chicken yard, and I would do Howard Cosell play-by-play of the whole event.
I kind of love this.
Some of it was really grisly, and I was at the time pretty comfortable with this stuff. But as I've gotten older, I'm soft. I couldn't do that again.
One of the things as I was researching this, while a lot of what I was focused on was like what actually happened with this contest and like the historical context for the contest. Of course, there were many things that I also read as part of this that were more written from an animal rights perspective more recently that were about, in one way or another, the state of chicken farming today. And one of the arguments that I saw somebody make was that if a person wants to eat animal meat in any way, they should be required to like participate in the raising and slaughtering process to see what it's actually like. And your anecdote just reminded me of that.
Yeah. I mean, I know what it's actually like. Yeah. I know every time we say we love animals on the show, someone writes to us to say, but you're not vegan and you might be a monster. And I'm like, but I have participated and I have seen humane farms versus inhumane farms. Like, I have also done trips to industrial slaughterhouses and they're horrifying and haunt me.
Right.
Which is why I try to always source anything I eat from not that.
Most of the meat that we eat in our household, we are getting directly from a farmer. We have a meat share. It was specifically a poultry share for a couple of years. And then the farmer that we were working with decided they needed to kind of retool what they were like how their chicken process was working. And they had a couple of unfortunate that time. This is a sad story. You might want to like skip ahead maybe 30 seconds if you're going to be really bummed out by a sad story about chickens. During that time in the early pandemic months when there was just a total backlog at the postal service and mail was delayed by a really long time, they had whole shipments of chickens that didn't arrive on time and were dead when they got there.
Yeah.
And of course, that was like upsetting and horrifying to everybody involved. But we know that this farmer is working with all of their animals in like a respectful way. In addition to feeling like we are getting, we're supporting a farmer who is taking these steps and who is, you know, trying to be thoughtful and compassionate in how they raise and care for these animals. The variety of the eggs that we get from them delights me because it's not like from the grocery store most of the time where you open the box and it's like a dozen identical eggs.
Yeah.
They are different colors and different sizes and different. I love them. It's great. So anyway, I know that for a lot of folks, like that is not enough and they do not want to eat any animal product at all. And I respect that decision. At my house, it is more, we try to get all of our meat from like sources that are working as humanely as possible and also to eat less meat. Like the majority of my meals don't actually include any meat. So meat is mostly a dinner food at my house for me and not the rest of the meal's food.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this too. As meatless options have become more varied and more delectable, like it's so much easier to cut back on.
Yeah.
On eating meat. I remember a time when one of my dearest friends was traveling with me to theme parks I love very much and was vegetarian. And at one point she looked at me and said, I cannot eat another roasted vegetable flatbread.
Yeah.
And now that is not really a problem because everywhere has something yummy and delicious that is a true actual like entree option that is not just the, I don't know, what can we throw together that does not include these things?
I think I've told this story on the show before, but I'm going to tell it again. I know there are cuisines all over the world that are rich in plant-based options. Like, I'm aware of this. But growing up in Northwest North Carolina in the 1980s and 90s, there were not a lot of options. And so when I stopped eating meat in high school, there were Chinese restaurants that we could go to that had like a vegetable, it was just like vegetables in a sauce with rice. That was an option. But there was this one restaurant called Rainbow News and Cafe, which was a restaurant slash bookstore. And they had, as I recall, two vegetarian options on the menu. And that was a big, big deal. Like it was the only like specifically vegetarian thing on any restaurant in the area that I knew of. One of the things was a vegetarian chili, which would have been more accurately described as a vegetable stew. It bore no resemblance to chili of any sort. And then the other thing was a barbecue tofu sandwich, which was like a bun with the fixings that you would expect on a burger with just a slab of tofu that had been sort of slathered in barbecue sauce. You would bite into it and like the barbecue sauce plus the tofu slab was really slippery. So the tofu would just shoot out the other end. I loved that bookstore restaurant so much. I really, really did. In hindsight, that was a terrible sandwich.
But it gave you an option, which is probably why it felt amazing.
Yes. There was also my standard of Caesar salad and French fries from McDonald's, not understanding that Caesar salad dressing had anchovies in it and not knowing that at that time, McDonald's is using beef flavoring
beef
in their French
tallow.
Fries. I don't know if that's still the case because I remember when like that became news, there was beef flavor in the McDonald's French fries and vegetarians were horrified. So anyway, so glad there are so many more options now and so many more options at the regular grocery store. I know there's a lot to think about in terms of like foods like quinoa and how the communities that have raised quinoa are being in a lot of ways disadvantaged by yes. like the popularity of foods like quinoa among Americans. Like that's a whole other thing, but
it's really hard. The ethics of food and what you consume and what you're comfortable with. One, I mean, I think it's very individual in terms of where anybody's going to sit, but also there are so many layers, right? Where it's like, okay, but like this solution solves this problem, but oh wait, it has its own mess of yuckiness and problem that we haven't thought about yet. But if we fix that, then another thing, it's like whack-a-mole of trying to do the right thing and it's hard.
Yeah. There's also just the totally converse part of like indigenous peoples that live in the very far north have historically had a very like meat-based diet. And I've seen a lot of people talking about being like judged and vilified for continuing to eat foods that are part of their like traditional food ways. And it's like, but I can't just like grow a bunch of wheat here.
Right.
the ground is frozen. Like there's a lot to think about. And a lot of times I think people try to offer very easy solutions and those very easy solutions have a lot of complexities that are not,
right.
that are not really evident. And so you really start thinking about stuff. I didn't know until researching this that commercially farmed broiler chickens, these hybrids that have been developed today, they are so big and they grow so fast and they convert their feed into meat so efficiently that they can't live outside of this environment and they probably wouldn't live long beyond their slaughter date because of the way their bodies develop. I didn't know any of that at all. And that was more surprising to me than the fact that a grocery store and the USDA teamed up to have a contest, which was the thing that had sparked my attention in the first place. Whatever's coming up for you this weekend, hope it's great. Hope it's great. Whatever you're going to eat this weekend, I hope that's great. If you would like to send us a note, we're at historypodcast@iheartradio.com. And we'll be back with a Saturday Classic tomorrow and something brand new on Monday. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.